Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
On 93 WIBC. So
let's rock it. This is so funny, man. Just shaking my head. There's this court filing today. Hunter Biden finally confirming what I think we've all known for the past few years. The laptop from hell was his.
You don't say.
He confirmed the laptop was his by these two court filings, when for years we've been told it wasn't his, it was Russian misinformation, it was hacking. But now, and we'll get to the crux of these lawsuits or these threatening letters that Biden's attorneys have been sending out here in a second, it's clear now that they're admitting that, yes, this was his laptop.
So basically, with Hunter Biden admitting this, he confirmed a couple other things we knew. Number one, the feds are full of crap. And number two, the Biden family is full of crap. So let's start with the feds here. Remember when old egg fart smelling John Brennan, he's got one of those faces that always looks like he smells an egg fart. John Brennan was one of 50 U.S. intel officials who lied about the Hunter Biden laptop. He's also lied under oath multiple times. Brennan was the front runner of this being a Russian smear campaign. And guess what? His partners in the media ate it up.
Secret emails.
A really fishy story.
The Post claimed that the emails were found on a laptop computer that was brought to a repair shop in Delaware in the spring of 2019.
The FBI is now investigating whether those alleged Hunter Biden emails are actually connected to a larger foreign intelligence operation.
Oh, okay. They may be related to a foreign intelligence operation.
Foreign intelligence operation.
Foreign intelligence.
Foreign intelligence.
Foreign intelligence operation.
For all we know, these emails are made up.
The information found on the laptop may be part of a Russian disinformation campaign.
Part of a Russian disinformation effort.
Described by many intelligence experts as having hallmarks.
All the hallmarks of a Russian.
Russian disinformation.
Russian disinformation.
Disinformation campaign.
This is a classic example of the right-wing media machine.
The thumb. This is the right-wing media. You fired fat turd. Sit down and shut up. Everybody knew this except for the people that were vested in it. The Bidens, the feds, and the media who carries the water for them.
So, the question remains, why is Hunter Biden and his privileged family and their expensive lawyers sending out all these threatening letters to sue people over this? It's because, I'll tell you exactly, it's to silence any discussion, anything about this incriminating laptop. It's to silence and squash because, there's going to be Congress probes into this. You know, the Congress is going to set up committees to look at the relationship with the Biden administration, his son, Ukraine, Russia, China. And the Biden's lawyers are trying to intimidate the computer repair shop guy who turned the laptop over to the FBI. They're claiming he basically stole the computer, even though he had it signed. He had a signed work order that made it clear he was allowed to examine the hard drive after 90 days. It was legally abandoned. It was his. And now Biden's lawyers are saying that he just tried to weaponize its content. They are trying to intimidate anybody that has anything to do with this thing with prosecution if they go talk to Congress.
So I want to get into that in just a moment. I've got some audio for you here in just a moment, but let's back up just a little bit because I'm old enough to remember when Hunter Biden, when he was peddling his god-awful book, went on to CBS and acted like, hell, I don't know whose laptop it could be.
Was that your laptop?
For real, I don't know.
I know, but you know that's...
I really don't know. Okay. The answer is...
You don't know yes or no if the laptop
was yours. I don't have any
yours.
Idea. I have no idea.
So could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that it was Russian intelligence. It could be that it was stolen from me.
You knew damn well it was yours.
Yeah, there's a signed work order that it's yours with your signature.
And now you've came out and confirmed it, which means you lied in the past, the feds lied in the past, and the big guy, Joe Biden, don't tell me he didn't know that was your laptop. And he spoke in debates, he did speeches, he did interviews, and he lied out of his old geriatric backside as well.
50 former national intelligence folks
who said that what this he's accusing me of is a Russian plant. They have said that this is has all the care. Five former heads of the CIA, both parties, say what he's saying is a bunch of garbage.
Including
this
Brennan.
Is classic Trump. We have 4 days left, and all of a sudden, there's a laptop. There's overwhelming evidence
blaming Trump for it
from the intelligence community that the Russians are engaged.
I still think that the stories from the fall about your son Hunter were Russian disinformation and a smear campaign, like you said.
Yes, yes, yes. It's the last-ditch effort in this desperate campaign to smear me and my family. The vast majority of the intelligence people have come out and said there's no basis at all.
That's you're almost speechless when you hear those montages. You knew from the very beginning they knew they were lying. We knew they were lying, and now we officially know that we're lying because it was because of the court filings today.
So now the question becomes, what's next? If you watch NBC's news, you're going to still believe that it's all a big hoax, and what really needs to be addressed are those horrible people that leaked the contents of the laptop. This was this morning on the Today Show on NBC. This wasn't a couple months ago. This wasn't, you know, a couple days ago. This was this morning when the news broke. Look how they bend themselves in a pretzel trying to make Hunter the victim here.
We are tracking what appears to be an aggressive new legal strategy. Hunter Biden trying to go on offense as House Republicans are preparing investigations into him and his business dealings. We could see that as soon as next week. Hunter Biden's lawyers writing a letter to the DOJ and Delaware Attorney General asking them to criminally investigate some of former President Trump's allies. You know these names, Rudy Giuliani, Steve Bannon, for what they allege is trafficking in stolen information, including data possibly from his laptop, and an effort to weaponize the contents from that laptop against President Biden.
So if you woke up in the morning and you turned on NBC, you would think that the horrible people that leaked the laptop was the story. That's not the story. The story was Cokehead McGee confirmed that, yes, it was his laptop, and there could be some very incriminating stuff on that thing. And this goes into what you mentioned earlier, Nige. The Biden team's trying to spin this, make Hunter the victim, and they're trying to sue everybody under the sun for the fact that the laptop got leaked out. And this includes Tucker Carlson.
I'm sure that'll go over well.
Hunter Biden's lawyers sent separate letters threatening Tucker Carlson with a defamation lawsuit. They're also demanding apologies from Tucker Carlson okay. and Sean Hannity. Tucker Carlson, your thoughts?
It's not going to work.
Thank you, Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, and does Biden really want to go to court with Fox News and then go have to go through some sort of discovery process to reveal what really is the truth behind Hunter's finances? Is that the strategy here?
And you get into a big lawsuit like that, you're going to have to start talking about what's true, what's not, which means you're talking about what's on the laptop. Now, if you remember, and again, I know he's a bit of a crackpot at times, but Rudy Giuliani, he was the one that originally got the laptop from that shop. He got the laptop. He looked what was on there. He turned it over to the Delaware State Police. It's not just Ukraine stuff that's allegedly on this laptop. Rudy Giuliani says there's some Hunter Biden stuff with underage girls.
There's a text message to his father in which he says the following, and he's discussing his sister-in-law, who for quite some time was his lover.
Ew.
And he says, she told my therapist that I was sexually inappropriate. This would be with a unnamed 14-year-old girl. When she says that I FaceTime naked with the unnamed 14-year-old girl, and the reason I can't have her out to see me is because I'll walk around naked smoking crack, talking Tom girls on FaceTime. When she was pressed, she said that the unnamed 14-year-old girl never said anything like that, but the bottom line is that I created and caused a very unsafe environment for the kids. This is supported by numerous pictures of underage girls.
Well, I could see how Hunter Biden and his lawyers don't want this kind of information out there.
Right.
And they've doubled down on it now.
So if these lawyers want to be Mr. Tough Guy and start going after Tucker and Hannity and all these other folks, Steve Bannon, be careful what you wish for, because your out of control drug addict crack smoking son's got a lot of bad stuff on that thing, allegedly. All right, Matt Bear, what's going on?
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show on 93 WIBC.
Longtime friend of the show, Christina from Hoagies and Hops, bringing us a little munchies here on a Thursday afternoon. Christina, we've known you for so long. You're make sure and pull that right up to your mouth there.
There we go.
And I just love it. Would you consider yourself a mom and pop type of shop? Do you like that terminology?
I guess. I mean, I'm local, a small
long-time,
business.
Yeah, small yeah, business, I mean, long-time local owner, embedded in the community yeah. here. And it's just, I love Hoagies and Hops because I remember what you were going through during COVID, and you would come in here and say you guys were bending over backwards for these bureaucratic public health officials doing some,
That's a very nice way to put it. It's a lot nicer than what we would have said.
Right? It was definitely a tough time, but let me tell you, the aftermath has been harder with the price increases and everything like that. I've been hit harder now than I was during that time.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I felt the pressure afterwards more than I did during. Obviously stress, but I felt the number pain after.
But you're still a locally owned business, and you're still surviving.
Yep.
And you've been with us for a long time. We really appreciate it.
7 years I've been open.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah. I think I used to go when you were at the other spot. It was closer to the station.
When I was on Norman Street.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're obviously from Philadelphia.
From outside. From the burbs. From Montgomery County.
Yeah. What makes you say that, Nige? Because if you're watching on the YouTube stream, we've got an Eagle stocking hat. We've got an Eagle shirt.
Actually, this was given to me by your buddy Brian Alvey, too, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I came home right before Christmas and I had this. I mean, granted, I have tons of Eagle stuff, but yeah.
And like, as an indie sports fan, I'm jealous of you because you got the Phillies in the World Series.
I know, this was a
you
great
got
year.
The Eagles in the Super Bowl. Like, meanwhile.
Penn State, well, you know, Rose Bowl. I mean, we did.
Meanwhile, are there Eagles fans in Indianapolis?
Heck, there are.
Okay.
Oh,
so
yeah. So since I opened, I mean, I've met thousands of people, transplants, but every football game, like one of my biggest things when I moved up to the north side to Butler Tarkington and had my own location partner with Chili Water, was to have the NFL ticket, being able to show all the games. Everybody just wanted a place where they could all get together.
Philly friendly bar.
Yeah, so we were packed every day, every Sunday this past year. These playoff games, insane.
Imagine what the Super Bowl is going to be like.
It's going to be insane because when I was in the Super Bowl, not when I was in the Super Bowl, but when I was only 3 years in the business and the Eagles were in their Super Bowl and won, I mean, just as soon as the championship game was over, I was slammed. And I had people coming from Ohio, Illinois, Kentucky. People lined out the door the day before. I mean, the day of. It was crazy.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding Eagles fans get a little fired up. They tend to get a little carried away. Have you had any problems with the Eagles fans?
There hasn't been any problems. There's a few that get a little crazy, but they just walk out. And they kind of walk around the patio and then walk back in.
Yeah. Sure.
That guy just stabbed somebody. Hey, it's all right. They should have went for it on fourth down. I understand.
It can be intense. It can definitely be intense.
Is being a restaurant owner, a business owner, a small business owner, 24 hours a day, 7 day a week job for you?
Oh, my God. I sleep. I dream it. I mean, I really do.
Are you there every day? Are you on premise every day?
I'm sure you have good people under you. Yeah. So I've started actually over this past year. I have an amazing crew, and I've actually been able to hire some management so I can actually focus on growing. Like, I'm working on a food truck.
Have you been able to retain them?
I am there at least 5 days. My GM is amazing. Yes. Yep.
Restaurant owner that I've spoken with, it's like, yes, we'll hire people, but they're gone in a couple of weeks. The retention has been rough.
I take care of my staff. I take care of them before I take care of myself.
That's awesome.
And that's, you know, I didn't get into this business to become a rich girl. I got into it because I wanted to enjoy what I did on a daily basis and bring the love of this deliciousness to here.
And it's so authentic because you are Philly.
Yeah, the rolls are shipped in. So that is the number one thing. We use shaved ribeye, which is your number two thing. I only offer cheeses. Just today I had a guy walk in. Can I get pepper jack? No. No, no, no.
Cheese Whiz.
You don't. I only offer
Must
cheese.
Must be a Cowboys fan.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, that's just something a lot of the chains have gotten a lot of people thinking, oh, this is how you have a cheesesteak. No, this is not.
And how have you had to adjust? You mentioned price increases. Yeah. You survived the awful bureaucracy, the ridiculous lockdowns and the public health mandates and things like that. You've come through it all and you're still thriving, it seems like.
Things are great. I mean, the community, the neighborhood that we're in has been huge supporters. They got me through that whole entire time by using me for catering and every little thing. And I do a lot of dine to donate. So I always feel like what comes around goes around, what goes around comes around, or whatever saying is. But yeah, it's awesome.
So you've got a big anniversary coming up tomorrow, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been in business for 7, but I've been in the Butler-Tarkington neighborhood now. It'll be 4 years where we're partnering with Chili Water. Now, their main location is in Fletcher Place. But they do have their tap room with me, and we call it ourselves Philly-opolis.
So you got cheesesteaks and beer going hand-to-hand
God. Yeah. Yep. Genius. So we decided to do a collab, which we've done every year, and we call it the Philly-opolis. Like I said, it's a blend of the two cities. And I actually I just had this beautiful mural put in that says Philly-opolis, too. It's really cool in the bar. But, yeah, we're bringing out a Philly-opolis blonde with a hint of chocolate in the back end of it.
Is this what we have?
Is that what I'm drinking right now?
That's exactly what you have right there.
I did taste the chocolate there in the back end.
And it's just on the back end. It's very subtle.
Good.
But it's nice and light. You know, I think it's 5.2. You know, easy drinking. So we'll be doing that tomorrow. We'll also have like a little open mic because we do live jazz every Thursday. So those guys
jazz?
Yeah. Well, we do it every Thursday night.
And that's amazing.
Those guys are actually going to come in tomorrow and just set up and people can come on in. And if they want to jump in and sing and...
Do people need to make a reservation if they want to come in Super Bowl or what?
So, like,
what's
Super
the deal?
Bowl,
I know you've got a charity thing going on.
So what I'm doing, because I mean, people are ready to throw money at me on that day of the championship game,
and let me just
think, because this is not what I'm used to doing. And we're a small location. So what we're doing is, and I just put it out today because I've had people asking me every day what the plan is, but I am going to be donating seat sales. So the reservations will be $20, but each seat, that donation is going to be going towards the Indy Steelers youth football program, which happens to be in our neighborhood.
Which obviously
needs, you know, I think just a little up in morale. I think it'll just be fantastic. And as I said before, you guys know I always do a lot of donations and things for the community. So to me, instead of me just taking the money, I know people are going to come in and enjoy themselves, but I'd rather give back at the same time. Now, you know, those that think they're going to want to order cheesesteaks, like say, oh, I want to order 20 cheesesteaks that morning and pick it up at 5. That's not happening. So you're going to be waiting in line with everybody else like you would in Philly, because I got that back in 2018. Oh, when can I order my individual hoagies? No, I'm not going to stop at 5 o'clock when I have a line out the door to make 20 cheesesteaks. Yeah. So it's going to be like you call right when you're about to come. We'll say, hey, it's a 45-hour wait, 2 hours, whatever.
So we got about a minute or so left here.
Yes.
You have brought some sandwiches.
I have.
Yeah.
What do we got? I just took a bite.
So we got, I have a couple of different ones. I got,
if you're
the
watching on the YouTube, you see the awesomeness of these things right now.
There you go.
I got the cheese whiz.
The whiz whit, which is, that's what you're having, Nigel. And then the other one is one of my favorites. It's provolone, it's onions, it's sweet bells, which I love. And on Alessio's roll out of South Jersey.
Now, if somebody wants to customize their Super Bowl meal, maybe they want a little cheesesteak to represent Philly, but Kansas City is barbecue country.
Yeah.
You were telling me you got a little partnership going on.
Yeah, so my real good friends at Squealer's Barbecue, we've been friends for a long time. We're going to actually take some of their hot sauce, their hot barbecue.
Good idea.
And we're going to do a little hot barbecue cheesesteak.
Squealer's is a great place.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They're great guys. And this way, for those who don't care about maybe who's in the Super Bowl, it's just a fun thing if you want to have a Super Bowl party and kind of get involved. But I'm also doing hoagie platter. So yeah, give us a call if you want catering.
Well, Sam, give us a little music here to say goodbye to our friend Christina. Little fly, Eagles fly
there
for you.
It is. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you so much. Hoagies and Hops, awesome place doing awesome things for Indy. Christina, thank you. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show on 93 WIBC.
Hello, my name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is here with a special guest on the DriveHubler.com hotline.
Tommy Pigott is the RNC Rapid Response Director. Tommy, we got a number of places we can start here. Let's go with the laptop. The laptop from hell. Hunter Biden denied it. Joe Biden denied it. John Brennan said it was Russian interference. Well, lo and behold, I'll be damned. It turns out that it was Hunter Biden's. Your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, today we had Hunter Biden's attorneys basically admitting that the laptop was his. They called it, quote unquote, going on offense here, trying to sue people that were reporting on the laptop. But in that filing, they basically conceded the laptop was Hunter's, which is confirming what we already knew, what had already been confirmed by multiple news outlets across the spectrum, that it was Hunter Biden's laptop. And I think this kind of has four broad points that just confirms, you know, kind of makes the case here for. The first is that Hunter was involved in massive influence peddling. We know that. The second was that this adds to evidence that Joe Biden was involved in Hunter Biden's business deals. The third is that the story should never have been censored by big tech. And the final one is that Joe Biden can't be trusted. You mentioned the fact that Joe Biden denied that the laptop was legitimate. Joe Biden and his allies basically called this laptop Russian disinformation and got it censored right before the election. Shows you can't trust Joe Biden as far as you can throw him. And that really applies to the fact here with the GarageGate document scandal and investigations of Biden Inc. to come.
So what is the point here? What are Hunter Biden's lawyers really trying to do here? I think they're trying to silence discussion, as it's been silenced before, for this laptop, which is incriminating by shutting down, witnesses which include the laptop repair guy, by threatening them with a criminal prosecution if they go testify with Congress. That's my take.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, this is part and parcel of a pattern with the left, which is intimidation. When the facts aren't on their side, they try to weaponize the levers of government against you. That's exactly what Hunter Biden's trying to do here. He's trying to weaponize the government against legitimate reporting, legitimate questions about his influence peddling. That seems clear to me based off of what's going on here. And the White House, the Biden White House, is refusing to comment on it, refusing to rule really? Out some sort of political influence on the DOJ when it comes to this letter that Hunter Biden said, that Hunter Biden's attorney sent. It really raises concerning questions, but it's part of a real concerning pattern, whether Biden is weaponizing the government against concerned parents, whether he's weaponizing it against pro-life Americans, whether he's weaponizing it against people that don't agree with him or want the border secure. The left always does this when they know the facts aren't on their side. They try to intimidate you and try to make you silent. But I'm confident, based off the reporting, that this issue will be looked into. This issue is not going away, and Hunter Biden can't sweep this under the rug.
Tommy, I expected Hunter Biden to lie. I expected Joe Biden and his inner circle to lie. Maybe I was a little bit naive, but the fact that John Brennan and about 50 others were carrying the water for this lame ass, well, looks like a Russian interference excuse, they had no idea what they were talking about. And it just, if somebody doesn't have faith in the government, it's stories like today that really feed their fire. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think the one thing that I actually take issue with is the idea they didn't know what they were talking about. I think evidence indicated the laptop was legitimate from the start. And Joe Biden and his allies, I believe, certainly recognized Joe Biden's emails and their Hunter Biden's emails. I mean, they knew, they recognized this sort of information on there, and yet they spread these lies anyway. So I think this actually raises more questions about the trust you should have in these officials that are using their positions to put partisan pressure on our political system, especially from Joe Biden and his allies. I mean, the idea that Joe Biden would go out there and call this laptop disinformation, when based off of his own involvement in it, should have known this laptop was legitimate, shows how much you cannot trust Joe Biden, how much he will just lie and smear to get what he wants. I wish that wasn't the case, but the evidence I'm piling up that is the case. So you're exactly right to say that this hurts trust in our institutions. This hurts trust in our government. It's ironic that a man that ran on the platform of restoring trust in our government is doing maybe more to undermine trust in that government than anyone really has in modern political times. It's deeply concerning, and I'm so glad the House majority is in there, the Republican House majority, yeah, to demand accountability from this administration.
And I really just think it's dumb on Hunter Biden's part to you know, send out a sternly worded email to Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity demanding they apologize or else suffer the wrath of a lawsuit. Do they really want to go to court with Fox News Corporation and go through a discovery process that would indeed, I think, reveal the truth that we all know about of the finances of Hunter Biden?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't deign to give Hunter Biden legal advice. It seems like he maybe could use some better one. I'm not a lawyer, though, so I won't really get involved there. But I do think that the more light is shown on Hunter Biden's finances, the worse it is for the Biden family, and not just for Hunter Biden. It's for Frank Biden. It's for James Biden. It's for Joe Biden. This entire Biden Inc. apparatus that has made millions off of peddling influence, really on the backs of the American taxpayer. And we're just starting to get answers now. The House majority, House Republican majority, is not looking the other way. They're looking into this with all the powers of the House gavels. And I'm confident we're going to get answers.
Tommy Pigott is the RNC Rapid Response Director, joining us here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. So, Tommy, let's get into the classified document search here. Classified documents were found at three different locations of Joe Biden's. Yesterday, the feds go into the beach house in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. They didn't find anything. Am I being a little bit over the top and thinking, now, wait a minute, Joe Biden was at that location a week ago. Is it completely out of left field to think maybe he got tipped off by somebody on the inside and got everything out of there? I don't know. I don't think you can rule anything out at this point, can you?
Well, you can't rule anything out. I mean, I think even just beyond going someone tipping him off is the idea that Joe Biden was going to these places in the first place. He spent 40% of his presidency on vacation, but he happens to go to Rehoboth the week before there was a search of the Rehoboth Beach House, and he goes to Wilmington before there was a search of the Wilmington House. I mean, at the very least, these investigations or these searches, excuse me, should have happened sooner after the initial documents were disclosed. But Biden's attorneys, Biden's team have been really not telling the truth about this from day one. And that's why really no question, I think, has been ruled out, because the entire MO of this Biden team has been a lack of transparency and a lack of honesty when it comes to these documents. I mean, the fact that Joe Biden was sitting there in September, I believe it was, saying, how could someone be so irresponsible to mishandle classified documents when he had classified documents in his home for decades? I mean, that's the level of dishonesty we're dealing with here. So unfortunately, you can't take the word of Joe Biden. I wish I could, but the pattern shows that you can't. And it is concerning that right before these searches, he was at these houses. He was at the scene of the crime right before that these houses were searched.
And by the way, and nobody's talking about his house in Virginia, that, you know, almost $5 million house that kind of, it looks kind of like the White House, man. It looks awesome, actually. But I'm wondering when the feds are going to show up at 3 o'clock in the morning, knocking on his door down there in Virginia. And also, I thought it was interesting, and it was almost kind of a throwaway line at the end of the story of how the DOJ did take for further review some materials and handwritten notes that appeared to relate to Biden's time as VP. So they didn't even take classified stuff from his beach house, Tommy. They took stuff that wasn't classified. I wonder what that could be.
Yeah, I think that people are really interested in what those notes pertain to, because there could be classified information in those notes, right? Even if they're not marked classified, there could be classified information in them. So I think that's part of what the review process will hopefully show. I think you're exactly right to mention the Virginia House, though. I think, interestingly, the Penn Biden Center, where the first class batch of classified documents was found, only opened about a year after Joe Biden left the vice presidency, which means a lot of these documents didn't end up there until a year after his vice presidency, meaning that they were somewhere else during that time. Hmm. So where were those documents? Basically, where wasn't Joe Biden having classified documents after he left the vice presidency? I think we need to search almost every single location he's ever been, because apparently he thinks keeping a bunch of classified documents next to his Corvette is appropriate. So if that's really his standard, I think there's nowhere that Joe Biden's been that shouldn't be searched because of how irresponsibly, using his word, he's acted when it's come to classified documents.
Tommy, one more thing here before we let you go. I watched Alejandro Mayorkas, the DHS secretary, have what I thought was a disastrous interview with MSNBC. He openly admits that he doesn't know where a lot of these people go that cross the border, openly admits, wants to get rid of Title 42. This is the guy that's supposed to be like doing his job at the border. But instead, he wants this to be wide open. And I think he's at the point now where he's like, screw it. I'm not even going to lie anymore. I don't know where these people at, and I want Title 42 to go away.
Well, it's showing that the reason why we have this border crisis is because of Mayorkas. It's because of Joe Biden. This is not something that has existed for decades like they're claiming. The scale of this is completely unprecedented, and it's because of the policies that they put into place. I think you're exactly right to say that Mayorkas has no interest in enforcing the law. He's basically said that. He has given a speech while he's been DHS secretary saying that illegal presence in the United States is not a reason for deportation, which is basically saying that he's not going to enforce the law. So you have a DHS secretary uninterested in enforcing the law. You have Joe Biden, who's actively handcuffing law enforcement when it comes to deportations, when it comes to make sure that illegal immigrants aren't crossing over the border. And as a result, you have over 1.2 million illegal immigrants who have crossed the border and escaped into this country, not even counting encountered, escaped into this country since Joe Biden took office. 1.2 million people, where we have no idea who they are. We have no idea where they are. We have no idea what they're doing. We only know they don't want to be caught by law enforcement. That should raise five alarm fire for every single American. But Joe Biden and Mayorkas are looking the other way. And that's why the House GOP is really looking into this and making sure that Mayorkas either enforces the law or resigns.
Tommy Pigott, RNC Rapid Response Director. Tommy, we always appreciate it when you join us here in Indy. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. 40 degrees at the American Standard Heating Weather Center at 93 WIBC.
Listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show on 93 WIBC.
Yeah, I would have liked to see the Lakers Pacers tonight. If I had tickets, I would have went. I would take my kid. He was briefly obsessed with LeBron James after Space Jam.
Okay.
After the Space Jam 2 or the remake of Space Jam, whatever.
Because that's his generation's Space Jam.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had some people like, oh, why would you let your son wear a Lakers hat or a LeBron jersey after all the political crap? And I'm like, dude, he's 10 years old. What do you want me to do? Give me a break. Kid likes what he likes.
Pacers and Lakers tonight, Gamebridge Fieldhouse. And good news for the Pacers, Tyrese Halliburton, he's active. He's coming back from injury, should be playing tonight. Now, I don't know if there's a minutes restriction or whatnot, but Pacers only won one game without him, and that was a rough stretch of basketball. So glad to have Tyrese Halliburton back on the Pacers. But we talked about this earlier, Nige. LeBron James, is he number one on the list of current athletes in any sport that you pay to see when they come to your town?
Mm.
Like, is he above Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or, you know, Aaron Judge or somebody like that?
Who would I rather see?
Because Brady's retired now. He's out.
I was just thinking about tennis player Djokovic.
Joker, huh?
Novak. Yeah, I was thinking about the Joker and watching him playing in a big major, you know,
right?
I would pay money to see him play.
Like Lionel Messi, if you're into soccer,
sure,
like that's a dude that moves the needle.
That's the thing. I'm not even that into tennis, but I pay attention to when that guy plays.
Sam,
he's the best in the world.
I think the answer is LeBron James, with the exception of a small little period of time when it was Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, which they're still athletes that you pay to go see. But there was a period of time when Curry was like finally out of a shell and Klay Thompson became this huge rising star where like that was the act in basketball or in sports to go see.
It was like the NBA Harlem Globetrotters guys were in their prime. So let me throw this out there because Rob Kendall brought this to my attention earlier. He's technically not active, and we're talking about active players, but he never really retired. So what about Tiger Woods? So if Tiger Woods decides to play some sort of tournament in your hometown, does that warrant your attention more than LeBron James coming to town?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, big time.
I would go to a Tiger Woods meet and greet. I don't know if I'd go watch golf.
I mean, it's hard to not watch the greatest of all time.
If you don't like watching golf, then you're not gonna enjoy this. I enjoy watching golf. So.
But see, I think I would go. I'm not a huge golf guy, but if Tiger's
playing.
That's
what I'm saying about tennis, yeah.
And Messi and soccer.
Yes.
I don't know anything at all about soccer, but to say that you watch one of the greatest of all time play. You know, Casey and Rob, they went to that Buccaneers preseason game.
Just so they could see Brady?
Right. when Tom Brady comes to town, you know, you buy a ticket because that's one of the greatest that's ever done it, and you can say you saw him play.
So currently, right now, LeBron James is on the top of that list. I remember the first time I saw LeBron play for the first time in his career here in Indianapolis back in 2003, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was with the Cavs. Good game. I can't remember who won. Had a bunch of beers. Went to Broad Ripple afterwards. But I would definitely, just so I could take my son, I would probably pay some cash just to watch him play.
So LeBron James and the Lakers in town tonight against the Pacers. Mm. LeBron James views himself as more than an athlete. He likes to talk politics.
See, I told you. And this brings us
to an all-new segment, Talking Politics with LeBron James.
And now, Hammer and Nigel presents Talking Politics with LeBron James.
You live and work in a state in which the majority of voters voted for the current president. How do you reconcile having called that choice a mistake that many of those people are also Cavaliers fans?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. At the end of the day, like I said, you can I don't think a lot of people was educated.
This has been Talking Politics with LeBron James.
Yeah,
quote, I don't think a lot of people was educated. LeBron James. Pacers-Lakers tonight. And then, of course, the big game in this part of the country is Saturday in Assembly Hall. Purdue on the road at Indiana. And that's going to be a fun one. That's a game you can hear right here at 93 WIBC. Don't go anywhere. Top stories next.
Hammer and Nigel.
Do you believe these characters are weirdos?
On 93 WIBC.
So let's rock it. What's going on? I'm Nigel. Hammer's over there. Our very own Abdul Hakim Shabazz made it official. He is now running for mayor of Indianapolis. Here he is earlier this morning on the Kendall and Casey show.
Officially at 11 o'clock this morning, we will be throwing our hat into the ring for the mayor of the city of Indianapolis.
So when I heard Abdul had a big announcement, I just assumed he was going to say he's the next head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. But you're telling me he's going to run for mayor. Okay. All right.
I like it. I'm all for it. I'm all here for it. I think he's got to make some changes. Like, I don't think he can do his show here anymore while he's currently campaigning.
So
there's some laws or something stuff
like
that. Yeah,
he can't have his own show, but I believe he can be a guest. So we're going to have him on our show tomorrow for his usual Friday hit. And what we're going to do tomorrow is have him on a little earlier, I think about 3:35, and we'll take some calls. So if you... at home, in your car, at work, wherever you're at, if you have questions about what type of candidate Abdul wants to be, we'll get a few of your phone calls in tomorrow as well. He's going to face a couple different people in the Republican primary, Pastor James Jackson and John L. Crouch. Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, you've got the incumbent Boss Hogsett, and he's got competition, that state rep Robin Shackelford. Now, again, Abdul will join us tomorrow. The future of that segment, I don't know. If I understand this correctly, as long as we put an offer out for equal opportunity, he can keep coming on with us. So if you're somebody that has filed the paperwork that is running for mayor, you've got a green light. You could come on our show, especially if you're Boss Hogsett. Hell, we've been trying to get this loser to come in here for years. So Boss Hogsett, all you goons that work for him, feel free to come by the Hammer and Nigel show and bring that big, goofy, ball-headed Ryan Mears with you. We'd love to have you on the show, but seriously, there's an open invite.
So how do you think he's going to do? I don't know any of the GOP guys that he's running against. I've never heard of these Republicans. So I think his visibility in this city helps him in terms of at least getting the GOP nomination, for sure.
Right. He faces an uphill fight, and we'll talk about this tomorrow when he's here. It's nothing we haven't told him already. It's 60% Democrat in Marion County. And think about Cindy Carrasco, the Republican's run for prosecutor. She was well-funded. She was a good candidate. She had the support of the police department, the FOP, and she got beat 60% to 40 because that's the political breakdown in Marion County. So Abdul has got to find some way of getting 20-plus more percent of voters to side for him. Can he do it? We'll see. We don't know what type of campaign he's going to run. Again, these are questions we can ask Abdul tomorrow.
I watched his kind of press conference in the clerk's office this morning, and it's a very big concentration on crime. And I know that's a big deal. It's a huge issue in this city. We've said one of the worst months in the history of Indianapolis, January. I think there's only been a couple more months that have been worse than January of 2023. His thing is going to be crime and putting people in jail that need to be in jail and not letting them out and closing, right. You know, hopefully slowing down to a crawl that revolving door of the criminal justice system.
And it's funny, all these little low-level staffers and interns that work for Hogsett, they're going through his Twitter feed right now. They're finding all these old tweets. We got hit up on Twitter by some, you know, bald-headed dude with the big beard. You know, nothing says 2004 like that look. This guy sent us, you know, screenshots of Abdul's tweets. And then I can only assume went back to his basement to listen to Mumford & Sons. But I'm telling you right now, Abdul is smarter than these people. He's not going to apologize. He'll make you look stupid. So understand that right now. He's not going to apologize. So have fun. Dig through all the old tweets that you want. Yeah, a talk show host and a stand-up comedian might have something controversial on Twitter. Good luck finding anything that sticks.
Yeah, and just and his point was, and they asked him about that today at the press conference, and he said, you can look through all my old tweets you want. Why don't you concentrate on crime? What do you concentrate on what's going on right now?
Right.
And that's what you're busy doing, going through old tweets that are quite frankly hilarious.
The same people that are digging through Abdul's tweets are pretty silent about the insane amount of crime that took place in the city in January. Second all time. Interesting happenings on Capitol Hill today. After years of unapologetic anti-Semitism and really just kind of being a horrible person, Ilhan Omar was kicked off of the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Bye.
There was a vote. Every Democrat voted to keep Ilhan Omar on, but they don't have the numbers anymore. And honestly, when you look at what's happening with the squad, right? Like the people that get the most magazine covers in the House, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Tlaib, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, the two biggest stars are AOC and Ilhan Omar. They're taking some shots right now. They're taking some L's because you had AOC being booed in her own hometown, and it got so bad she was trying to fake an accent just to try to relate. It's like she's doing almost like a parody of Speedy Gonzalez.
That is so cringeworthy. And you remember, I think that town hall was a discussion about how people are upset that she is not more vocal against sending a bunch of money to Ukraine.
Keeping a war going on.
Sure. Yeah.
Today.
Listen. Wow. I mean, how insulting. It's not the way she talks. If you listen to her on Instagram, like one of her posts, I don't know, where she's putting on eye makeup or something like that, she sounds, you couldn't tell her from Kim Kardashian.
Right.
They sound exactly alike. They did not, she does not talk like the way she did right there.
Today, we also heard that AOC is one of a number of politicians, Democrats and a Republican too, that are being questioned about sending campaign cash to a Chinese foreign agent. So that's never good. You're getting booed in your hometown. You're sending money to a Chinese foreign agent.
Does her name happen to be Fang Fang?
Boy, Fang Fang's getting over on everybody. So that's their rock star. That's AOC. But Ilhan Omar kicked off the Foreign Affairs Committee, which brings us to fellow squad member Rashida Tlaib. I think she sees that her meal ticket, those two big stars of the squad, if they...
Those coattails.
Right. Yeah. If she doesn't have their coattails to ride on anymore, she becomes irrelevant. Listen to her speech today when they were voting to kick Omar off the Foreign Affairs Committee.
You are showing who you all are, really.
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
Omar will not be silenced.
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
To Congressman Omar.
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
That our country is failing you today through this chamber. You belong
to the gentlewoman is no longer recognized.
Wow.
So that seems rational.
What a hysterical. You know what? You know, take it and eat it and you'll like it, because January 6th committee was just a joke. All right? You didn't have any representation up there whatsoever of any Republicans. No,
that were willing to fight.
Cross-examined. Kinzinger and Cheney don't count. They don't absolutely count. So take these L's and shove them where the sun don't shine.
Are we going to see a parody on Saturday Night Live? Like when Kavanaugh was fired up because they falsely accused him of sexual misconduct.
Yeah, and he started getting passionate and crying. Well, you need to have a better calm demeanor to be in a political office, in a judge's robe.
Right. They had Matt Damon come out on Saturday Night Live and act like Kavanaugh. I can only assume they're going to have somebody reenact this bat crap crazy lunatic.
No,
don't hold
not.
Your breath. Man, time is, it's coming quickly, man. Joe Biden's State of the Union address is next week. We're going to get a bingo card put together because if we're going to watch this thing, we're going to have some fun. So Hammer and Nigel show, we will put together a bingo card and have that for the State of the Union next week. And to get you ready for what lies ahead, Joe Biden doing the State of the Union. Here are great moments in presidential speeches.
Great moments in presidential speeches.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Get ready, pal. You're going in for a problem.
Great moments in presidential speeches.
Oh, it's going to be a fun night. Fun night. Wow. And we found out who's going to be delivering the GOP response afterwards. I'm actually excited for this. I think this is going to be really worth
watching. Because those responses from the GOP have been very milquetoast and subdued.
Well, this year, they're bringing in some heat. They've got newly elected Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She is delivering the response to the State of the Union. As a matter of fact, earlier today, I had a chance to speak with Governor Huckabee Sanders, and I asked her a very important question. What does she think about the conditions of the unisex bathroom across the hall here?
I think it is disgusting.
Thank you. You're not alone, Governor Huckabee Sanders. Matt Baer standing by in the WIBC Traffic Center.
Hammer and Nigel presents.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. Is this anything?
On 93 WIBC.
Oh, yeah, Hammer. How do we play? Is this anything?
I am going to run a couple stories by you. You are going to weigh out the pros and the cons and give us a verdict. Is the story anything or not? Is this anything? 6-year-old out of Michigan ordered $1,000 worth of food from Grubhub when he was playing with his dad's phone. Here is Keith Stonehouse talking about their son Mason accidentally ordering this huge amount for delivery.
It's piles and bags of food, and they're dropping them off at the door, so I'm not communicating with the drivers. And I said, what is going on? Why are you bringing me food? He said, I don't know. You ordered from the shawarma place. I said, no. Oh. So I think I left the app open, and he saw that when he was playing with my phone and just started going to town. So he ordered multiple orders, chili cheese fries, the chicken pita wraps. He ordered multiple orders of that, multiple orders of ice cream, pizza.
I hope they gave away the excess food to some sort of charity or something. But moms and dads, this is, and I know this from experience, this is why you don't let your little kids play with your phones. Your iPhones are not toys. My kids have learned this about my phone. They do not touch my phone. I admit at one point in my, in the journey as being a dad at maybe, 5 or 6, I would let them watch like YouTube Kids or something on the app there on my phone, but eventually we were able to just get them their own tablet. Do not let kids play with your phone because crap like that is bound to happen.
Kids should not be playing with items that I watch porn on. That needs to be a The More You Know commercial.
I mean, it hadn't really occurred to me that line of thinking.
Just trying to help you out, Dad. Somebody had to say it.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Is this anything?
If you're
Let's just move on.
Yeah, if your kids are on the ABC Mouse app and the, you know, and then an hour later you're on Pornhub, that's not a good combination. Oh God. That was a good one.
Is this anything? Apple is getting some heat after urging people to honor Black history by exercising and closing their move rings on the Apple Watch. Here is Tamika Turner taking to TikTok to call out the company.
Good morning to everyone, except for Apple, which pushed me this notification this morning. It says, let's come together to honor Black history. Earn this Unity Award by closing your move ring for 7 days in a row during February. What? I just think it's unbelievable and unacceptable that, especially in the wake of Tyre Nichols' murder, the one thing that Apple has to say about honoring Black people and Black history is, use our product. Maybe lose a little weight. I mean, come on.
I got to be honest. I don't know anything what she's talking about right there, Nige.
What is... Yeah, what is closing their move rings?
So
wait a minute. So let's come together to honor Black history, earn this Unity Award by closing your move ring for 7 days in a row during... So they're encouraging, because it's Black History Month, for people to get exercise? But how does that...
A move ring shows how many calories you've burned so far. I just had to look this up. A move ring shows how many calories you've burned. So if you close that down, is that somehow racist? I don't understand. Is that my white privilege kicking in there? I don't know.
We both have a big ball of white privilege right now going on in this studio. Because do you know, Sam, do you have any idea what she's talking about?
I believe it's pretty much a ring that as you burn calories starts to fill and come to a full circle. So once you've reached your calorie burn goal for the day, you have a full circle. If you only reach half of it, it's a half circle. That kind of
But goal. I still don't understand how this is racist.
Oh, sorry. As far as the application to Black History Month, no idea.
Yeah. Okay.
It sounds like Apple is trying to glom on to Black History Month in any way, shape, or form that they can to put out a message for everybody to get exercise. Okay. That's what it sounds like to me. Maybe she has a point. I don't know.
Oh, come
on. I doubt it.
Imagine waking up and being upset by that.
Well, like, yeah. No, I'm not saying.
I've got to take to TikTok because it's Black History Month and Apple wants me to get off my fat ass. And I will not stand for that. Imagine waking up and feeling that way.
That's a bad way to live.
It is.
And that's the way a lot of people live. They wake up feeling oppressed. They wake up feeling that there is no hope of advancing in this world only because they're Democratic elected leaders like AOC, like Rashida Tlaib. Tell them so. You're oppressed. You're never going to get anywhere without my help. And I would be upset, too, if I woke up like that.
Like, it's one thing to be upset if, man, my taxes are going up, my elected leader are all turds. But we had people sending us screenshots of Abdul acting like they're upset. I can't believe Abdul said this 7 years ago on Twitter. You didn't know he said it yesterday. Now, all of a sudden, your day's ruined. Sit down, spin around, and shut up. Last one. Is this anything?
Oh, man.
A mom named Casey cut open the back of her couch to reveal all of the junk that had fallen inside the couch over the last 13 years that she's had kids.
Oh, yuck.
Here's the moment that she recorded and posted explaining all the crap that's in the couch cushion.
I'm scared. It's like an unboxing.
Oh, my gosh! What is this? It's disgusting! It's disgusting!
There's an Expo marker.
Baby, that's your couch.
What was in the couch, you ask? Goldfish, fruit snacks, hair ties,
yep.
A couple bras,
yep.
Some toddler clothes. I do not have toddlers anymore. Two remotes, nothing of value. I literally scooped it all up, put it in a garbage can, and burnt it.
Did this recently, one of our couches, everything except the bras. Goldfish and fruit snacks for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Goldfish. I mean, my kids still eat goldfish to this day.
Same. I got an 18-year-old. He's an adult. And I'll go into his room, and he'll be sitting on his bed eating goldfish. All right, kid. Knock yourself out. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. Jason Hammer right over there. My name is Nigel. We'll go straight to the Drive, Huebler.com hotline, and bring on Senator J.D. Vance from Ohio. Senator, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you guys for having me.
You know, before we get to all the stuff, I know your endorsement of Jim Banks. We want to talk about that. Hammer and I were just discussing, almost joking off the air. Are there, as far as you've come in your political career, are there people that still recognize you and only know you from your career as a best-selling author? Like, hey, aren't you the guy that wrote Hillbilly Elegy? What's going on with your career lately? Have you written anything new?
You know, it's funny. It's funny. I was in a Walmart in D.C. a couple of days ago buying laundry detergent, and a guy came up to me and said, "Are you the guy who wrote that book?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's me."
Do you also let them know you're now the one of the most 100 powerful people in the United States?
No, I try to remain anonymous. There's only trouble from letting people know you're a U.S. senator.
Yeah, right.
Whatever became of you? You still write? No, I'm a senator now, but thanks.
Well, my wife was impressed with me that I'm talking with you today. She loved the book. I love the movie. So we'll get all that stuff out of the way here at the beginning.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And, yeah, it's funny. You know, people ask me, what I'm up to now, and I just, you know, said, well, I made some bad choices. I got a new job.
How has D.C. been so far? And again, we're going to talk about the Jim Banks running for Senate, but the guy that created the opening, Mike Braun, he's been in the studio with us. He sat right next to us, and he said that the swamp is even dirtier than he imagined, and it's hard for one person that's new to make a difference. What's been your experience the little bit of time that you've been in D.C. as a senator?
Yeah, you know, I like Mike a lot, and I'm sad to lose him, though I think Jim is a great guy to replace him. You know, there's a lot of truth in what he says, right? The swamp is very real. The establishment is very good, I think, at targeting a particular type of person who's willing to take things on. That said, I think that if you're willing to pick your battles and you're strategic about where you can make a difference, there are some ways you can really, at the very least, move the conversation. And even especially with, you know, Speaker of the House, who's a Republican, and some real hardcore guys over there, there's a lot you can still do. And that's one of the things I'm trying to do here just in this first month is, you know, you can't fight and win every battle, but if you fight a couple battles well, I think you can make some progress.
Senator, looking back now, what did you think happened in the midterms? Not exactly the red wave a lot of people were predicting.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed with it, if I'm being honest with you. Obviously, my election worked out. There are a couple of other good guys that we got in there. But by and large, the closest races did not go in our direction. I think there are a few things going on there. I think first of all is, you know, we ran correctly on the fact that the Biden administration has been a disaster, the inflation problem and so forth. I think a lot of people were asking, well, what's the alternative? What are you going to do? You know, you can't just be anti something. You got to articulate a good positive vision on the other side, too. I think the other thing, honestly, is that a lot of our political leadership, a lot of our consultants and the people who are really running the campaigns started to get a little lazy towards the end. That was one thing that I tried to hammer on my campaign, and I think we were very good at it, is you really got to run through the finish line. You got to run through the tape because, you know, I've even talked to people who were running who thought they were going to win. They were overconfident towards the end, and I remember talking to people I thought would be future colleagues who were certain that they were going to win, and I think that certainty led a lot of our voters, but also a lot of our candidates to let off the gas, and that was a problem, which, you know, that's maybe one good way of segueing into Jim Banks here is we've got to get good people elected, and we can't assume that it's going to be given to us.
Senator J.D. Vance joining us here on the Hammer and Nigel show. So why did you decide to go out of your way to support a guy from Indiana? Has nothing to do with your home state, your district. Why did you go out of your way to support Jim Banks for his Senate run?
Well, because, you know, I'm one of 100 senators, and the better, the more you get really good people in Washington, D.C., the more it makes my job easier. It makes it easier for me to serve the people of Ohio, but it allows us to win some of the big victories that I think we need to win in order to save the country. Jim is a genuinely stand-up guy. The first endorsement I've made as a sitting senator, he's a veteran. He's a good conservative. He's willing to fight when he has to fight, and that's important. You can't just, you know, you can't just shrivel up and take it when the blob comes after you. You have to be willing to stand in there and take a punch, and that's certainly Jim. But all that aside, the substance, the style, he's great on. He's just a good guy, you know, a veteran who served this country, a guy who helped me a lot during my campaign, even in the primary. Jim went out of his way to back me early because I think he knew that it's important to have the right person in Washington. And I think, you know, now I can return the favor and hope you guys in Indiana send the right person. I think that's definitely Jim Banks.
Yeah, expand on that a little bit. What did you learn from Jim Banks in your run for Senate as you were making your way towards that goal?
Well, I'd point you guys to something a couple of years ago that got a fair amount of press attention at the time, though like a lot of things people don't remember this, but he wrote this really interesting memo to then, you know, Republican leader Kevin McCarthy. And the basic gist of it was, we have to wake up and realize who our voters are and what they actually want out of us, because far too many Republicans ignore both of those things. Jim is one of these guys who understands that at an instinctive level, I think in part because of how he grew up, his family, that we are now the party of normal people. We're the party of people who go to work, they pay their taxes, they want their kids to go to decent schools where they're not indoctrinated, they want to raise their families in a place of safety and security. We are not anymore the party of the country club. And that reality, I think, needs to set in the Republican Party, broadly speaking. But Jim gets it. He doesn't just get it. He's been a leader in driving that message over the last few years. That, to me, is the most exciting thing. It's all these substantive issues where we agree, right? He's great on the Second Amendment. He's great on life. He's great on, fighting back against the Chinese theft of our industrial base. He's great on all these issues. But he just gets that we are a different party than we were 30 years ago, and we've got to wake up to that reality.
Is the Republican Party kind of broken up in the Senate a little bit? Is it click-like? Because I could be wrong here, Senator, but I've just got the feeling you wouldn't be calling Mitt Romney to come over and watch the Super Bowl here in about a week.
Well, you know, we all get along. I will say that there are some big differences. You're absolutely right about that. There is collegiality. So when we disagree, we try not to make it too personal. You know, I mean, just one issue, and I have no idea where you guys are on this, but I'm one of these guys who's a little bit more skeptical of our posture towards Ukraine. I ask myself, how much money are we going to continue to send to that country?
Absolutely.
I can accept that other people look at that differently. But you've got to be willing to stand up there and actually advocate for your position. I do think that the caucus is divided a little bit on this issue, which is that, you know, a lot of Republicans, and look, whether you love Donald Trump, don't like Donald Trump, I just endorsed him a couple of days ago. He's actually the second person after Jim Banks that I endorsed during this cycle. Donald Trump tapped into something that was very, very real. And if our party doesn't wake up to what that was, we're going to go the way of the dodo. We're going to lose. We're going to deserve to lose, because a lot of our voters are pissed off. They have every right to be pissed off. And the question is, when they send us to Washington, do we sit on our hands and whine, or do we actually do something to fix the problems?
Speaking of being pissed off, Mitch McConnell, does he hold any sort of grudges against folks that were aligned with Donald Trump? Because it's no secret, those two don't really get along.
No, it's no secret at all. You know, Mitch doesn't like Trump, and I talk to Trump all the time. He does not like Mitch.
Feelings mutual.
You don't have to talk to him on the phone. You just have to look at his social media presence to know that. But, you know, the sense that I get, at least, is that Mitch doesn't like Trump, but I've never gotten the impression that I'm going to be penalized somehow because I endorse the president. Of course, if that changes, then I'll be the first person to get out there and holler about it. But so far, no, I think that Mitch recognizes that his caucus is divided on that question. So I hope that he continues to maintain some neutrality.
One more thing here before we let you go. Again, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance with us. He is putting his support behind Jim Banks in his upcoming Senate run. As you get into the process here in the next coming months, what do you want to see happen in the Senate?
Well, the first is I'd like us to really try to tackle the border issue. Look, yes, Joe Biden is president, but we at least need to put the issue to the Democrats. Are we going to continue to have the fentanyl coming across the border? Are we going to continue to allow the drug cartels to use our territory as their own playground? That to me is the biggest crisis we face as a country. I think that the other big question is, look, the debt ceiling conversation, the negotiation is going to be ongoing for the next 6 months. We need to put a stake in the ground that says, yes, of course, we're going to pay off our debts as a country. However, we need to get the country back on the path to fiscal sanity. And that is a long term ongoing thing. But we need to put especially the Speaker of the House in a position of strength in those debt ceiling negotiations, not undercut them the whole way. And I think we're in a position to do that. But we need to be willing to have that fight.
He is endorsing Jim Banks for Senate. That is Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Senator, thank you so much for your time and joining us here in Indy.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. 40 degrees at the American Standard Heating Weather Center here at 93 WIBC. Happy Groundhog's Day. Oh. Groundhog saw his shadow today. Oh. That means 6 more weeks of winter.
I was hoping we could go a show without even mentioning the groundhog.
Joe Biden saw his shadow today, and then he said this.
You ain't black.
So whatever you're celebrating today, crack open a cold one and turn the heat up because it's cold outside. It could be a real cold tomorrow, but then this weekend, early next week, we're in the mid-50s, so I'm good with that. Tom Brady announced his retirement yesterday, Nige, and tributes and stories all pouring in. Now, Tom Brady's old man, his dad, told the Boston Globe that he thought Tom was going to head to the 49ers had he not decided to retire. So if you're a 49ers fan, you're like, oh, that makes me feel good. Thanks, Tom's dad, for just rubbing salt in the wound. We just had to play an NFC championship game with like our running back as the quarterback. But, oh, yeah, we could have had Tom Brady next year. We had a Sarah McLachlan-style tribute yesterday.
We did, yes. Very emotional.
But I don't think that was enough, considering Tom Brady's won so many Super Bowls.
Right.
And he's kind of viewed as the GOAT. So we decided this calls for a Hammer and Nigel Records tribute.
Okay.
Now, when we put this together, we were listening to a lot of Styx.
I'll get to the point right away. I'm retiring for good.
Brady, I think this time you mean it.
Thank you guys so much.
You're retiring as the greatest quarterback of all time.
Thank you for allowing me to live my absolute dream.
We'll try to forget your last season, but the Buccaneers will probably have a hard time. You're Tom Brady.
Love you all.
A little something from Hammer and Nigel Records.
You know, he was successful after he left the Patriots and went to Tampa. That was amazing. He won the Super Bowl right after he left, right? Or was it
first
a year,
year
in between? Okay,
first year.
All right. And then this last year was his second year, which was abysmal, and still ended up making it into the playoffs, even though they had a losing record.
Right. It was an abysmal year, and they won the division.
Yeah.
Like, granted, it was one of the—
why can't we be in that division?
Well, that division wasn't much better than the AFC South, and the Colts still wouldn't have been anywhere close, unfortunately. They're closer to winning these divisions about as close as they are to hiring a head coach, which doesn't sound like it's going to happen anytime soon. Do not go anywhere.
Oh,
we got drama in Pendleton tonight.
Oh, no.
We'll talk about it next.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
On 93 WIBC.
So let's rock it. My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is here. As we discussed yesterday with Tony Kennett, who is a former STEM administrator, education journalist, investigative journalist now with the Daily Signal. He was telling us about what's going down at the South Madison School Board in Pendleton tonight. They want to fire a very popular and respected teacher. Her name's Kathy McCord, for basically telling the truth and letting everybody know the school's secret transgender policy.
So this big meeting is at 7 o'clock tonight, and I believe you're welcome to go. If you live in the Pendleton area, show up, see what happens. I know Tony Kennett's going to try to attend this, but basically McCord, who's a teacher counselor at Pendleton Heights High School, confirmed that there are documents that exist that what's happening in the school is that they're trying to hide the transgender policy from the parents. So they're telling teachers, do not reveal a student's new name and pronouns to the parents. So for argument's sake, let's say you had a child that went to Pendleton Heights High School, went in one day and said, I'm no longer Ricky. My name is Jennifer, and my pronouns are she and her. they have a policy in place to keep that information from the parents.
Yeah, reveal might even be the wrong word there. The lie to the parents is probably more accurate. Lie to the parents if they inquire about something like this going on with their child.
And from what I gather, and again, I don't live in Pendleton, but everybody that's reached out to us and a lot of people that have reached out to Tony Kennett say that this woman, Kathy McCord, she is universally respected by Republicans and Democrats, and these weasels in the school, they're going to try to blow her out because she's telling the truth and the truth got out to the public. They're using some excuse of she was leaking documents. But you know and I know that's not why she's being let go.
What I understand, Tony told me as well, that you know as much criticism as the teachers' unions get on this program, or specifically more from Tony Kennett and Rob Kendall, they are on her side, and they are in her corner in terms of being let go. They're going to fight for her ability to keep working.
So if indeed she is let go, folks in Pendleton, you know what happens when elections roll around. Find out who did what and vote these weasels out. Get names, take receipts. You might have to do a little bit of work to find out the names. I know not everybody can just rattle off the names of school administrators. Find out who had a hand in this and vote them out. Make your voice heard. Show up tonight, see what happens. And if they don't let anybody in, that tells you everything you need to know. In court earlier today, in a court filing rather, Hunter Biden finally confirmed what we all knew. The laptop from hell was indeed his. And there are so many different avenues of conversation here, Nige. It's, all right, Joe Biden lied when he said that it was just Russian information. Hunter Biden lied. He said, oh, it's not mine. I don't know whose laptop it is.
Several CIA officials, former and current, including Brennan,
right,
lied.
Brennan was under oath and lied. Yeah. So, all right, Kevin McCarthy in the House. I like what you've done so far. You've kicked off Eric Swalwell off the Intel Committee. Having sex with a Chinese spy will do that. You have kicked Ilhan Omar off the Foreign Affairs Committee.
How dare you?
Being an outspoken anti-Semite will do that. But now, let's get these committees locked up, locked in. Let's get some investigations rolling.
But that's what Biden's attorneys are doing. They're preemptively doubling down here, sending threatening letters to everybody from Sean Hannity to Tucker Carlson to Fox News to anybody. They're really actively trying to silence this discussion of his laptop, which I believe is incriminating to the Biden crime syndicate.
Right.
I mean, honestly, Twitter and big tech tried to censor this stuff before the elections, and now they're trying to do it again by witness intimidation. Biden's lawyers are intimidating that Delaware computer repair shop guy who turned it. He's the one that turned the laptop over to the FBI, if you remember. And they claim, the lawyers are claiming he basically stole the computer even though he had a signed work order that made it clear he was allowed to examine the hard drive after 90 days. It's legally abandoned. He had signed paperwork that was his.
And he tried to reach out to Hunter, too.
Exactly,
and nobody responded.
And Biden's lawyers are saying he tried to attempt to weaponize its contents. So I just don't think it's a coincidence that all these letters and all these threats from Biden's lawyers are coming just as Republicans in the House, as you mentioned, are getting ready to get probes open into the president's son. Is that a coincidence to you that these probes, these committees are getting ready to be to get out there, and now Biden's lawyers are threatening to sue Fox News Corporation, which is laughable as well.
They've turned Hunter into the victim in all of this.
Yeah.
You had incriminating stuff on a laptop, rumors of possibly some child porn on there, but yet Hunter's going to be the victim in all of this. Good luck pushing that story.
There's a little something called discovery. You're going to sue Fox and Tucker and Sean Hannity. They demanded apology. It's one of the first. I can't wait to go. I can't wait to watch Tucker tonight and see him apologize to Hunter Biden. Oh, I can't wait for tonight's show. It's going to be so delicious.
As we mentioned earlier, Ilhan Omar kicked off of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Man, the squad, they're losing momentum. They're going down the drain a little bit. A lot of drama going on. Ilhan Omar, part of the Foreign Affairs Committee, but today voted out. Let's go down a little checklist of possibly some of the reasons she's no longer welcomed on the Foreign Affairs Committee. She suggested on Twitter that American officials who support Israel were being paid to do so, quote, it's all about the Benjamins, baby. On Twitter, Ilhan Omar said Israel has hypnotized the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's some of the most classic, basic anti-Semitic tropes that have been around for hundreds of years.
Ilhan Omar compared Israel's security forces to the Hamas terror group.
I haven't seen any evidence in either cases that domestic courts can, both can and will prosecute alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. And I would emphasize that in Israel and Palestine, this includes crimes committed by both the Israeli security forces and Hamas. In Afghanistan, it includes crimes committed by the Afghan national government and the Taliban.
But wait, there's more. Ilhan Omar, remember this? Just very grotesque, downplayed the 9/11 terror attacks as, some people did something.
Oh, yeah. CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
What a lunatic.
Some people did something.
Yeah, some people did something.
Like kill 3,000, murdered 3,000 innocent Americans. Some people did something.
And again, they're not saying she can't be on other committees. Same thing with Fartwell. Same thing with Pencil Neck. You're allowed to be on other committees, but you're being kicked off the ones that basically you're no longer qualified to be a part of. Yes, Ilhan Omar, your history of anti-Semitic rants is going to get you kicked off the Foreign Affairs Committee. Swalwell, you banged a Chinese spy. Pencil Neck, you wasted over 2 years of everybody's time and money for Russian collusion that you never had. That's going to get you kicked off. All right, Matt Bear, what is going on?
The rain is here, and you, my dear. You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show on 93 WIBC.
Got a dating hack for the ladies that might be listening right now that aren't comfortable with, you know, meeting men in seedy bars or strange, gross apps on their phone. There's a dating hack for single women looking for men at Home Depot.
Oh, really?
The hardware store. Here's some TikToker named Holly explaining that going to Home Depot early on a weekday allows you to be the only lady in a sea of eligible bachelors.
Turns out, if you're looking for love, all you need to do is go to Home Depot at 8:30 in the morning on a Wednesday. They're there.
Literally everywhere. I am the only woman in that entire store. So ladies, if you're struggling to find love, grab yourself a cup of coffee, throw on some mascara, and head to Home Depot at 8:30 on a Wednesday. Girl, I got you.
How do you feel about that theory, Hammer?
It makes sense. I mean, I've never been to a Home Depot at 8:30 in the morning. I didn't even know they were open that early.
They're open real early. Yeah, just for the contractors and stuff getting started early. I don't know. I mean, like, where as a guy can I go on a Wednesday morning very early to meet nothing but chicks?
Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Sam nailed it, Bed Bath & Beyond.
I was going to say the Flying J, but... Depends on what type of woman you're looking for. You want somebody you want to take home to mom, or you want somebody that already is a mom?
So that's a unique way of meeting. I can't imagine there's any woman that's going to wake up and put her hair back in a ponytail and some mascara on and some lipstick and hit the Home Depot to try to pick up dudes 8:30 at Wednesday morning. You know, I don't know if that's a... I don't know if you could call this a dating hack.
But maybe this was like a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. I don't think she was being 100% serious. But that's a great question, though. Where would dudes go at 8:30 in the morning to try to pick up women?
Yoga class?
Yeah, something like that. Spin class, yoga class. Interesting. Hit us up on Twitter at Hammer and Nigel. And I want to hear from the ladies. Dudes, we'll go anywhere if we know chicks are there, right? But ladies, what advice would you give? Where do dudes go that early in the morning to try to pick up chicks? And a place where the chicks will welcome it, right? As soon as you walk in, get the hell out of here. Sorry.
I mean, I've been seeing a lot of Twitter posts that show women yelling at dudes in gyms for like checking them out. Like they'll have their camera running and see, oh, this guy's looked at me 5 times already.
And people take a lot of pictures in the gym too. Like, you know, if you want to get a selfie of yourself or something, that's fine. But don't do it in the locker room either. Like, didn't Pat McAfee get in trouble taking a selfie in the locker room once? And, like, Andrew Luck's bare ass was in the background. Feels like that happened when he was still playing for the Colts. Today is Groundhog's Day, but it's also another date on the American calendar. Big Nige, what are you drinking to celebrate National Ukulele Day?
Wow. Just whatever the beer we have in the fridge right now.
I don't know what it is, but it's got sweet, delicious alcohol in it. Today is National Ukulele Day. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to play you, Big Nige, a couple cover songs on ukuleles.
Okay.
Tell me if these do anything for you or not. Here's the first one. This is...
Don't tell me what it is. Let me guess.
Okay.
Oh, Guns N' Roses.
Yes. Sweet Child of Mine via the ukulele. Now, I know you've heard this one, because this one features not just the ukulele, but a kazoo as well. Come on. You know the name of this. Come on. Three, two, one.
Is it Asia?
No. Europe, the final countdown.
Europe.
I was giving you the hint, dumbass. 3, 2, 1. I was literally counting down.
I mean, of course it sounded familiar to me.
Mike, you're like the person that went on Wheel of Fortune and just completely missed the clue when all the words were spelled out. It's right there for you.
I don't even think there's an Asia band, is there? Is there an Asia band?
There is an Asia band.
An English rock band, okay.
All right, now this last one.
It's Europe.
3, 2, 1, and it still blew your mind. All right. This last one, it's a guy playing the ukulele, but he's also singing the lyrics to it.
All right.
I know it.
Get out the way. Oh no, the fight's out. I'm about to punch yo. Lights out.
The Ludacris via the ukulele.
I was taking a drink of beer there when he started kicking in with the lyrics. That was not a good time to ingest that. Wow.
Happy National Ukulele Day.
Yeah, I'm celebrating.
A new survey asked people what they would give up to never, ever have to worry about health ailments like the flu, the cold, COVID, whatever.
No, let me guess. It's like somebody said $1 million never for COVID or something like that.
Well, no. Really? Actually, COVID came in at number 3 on this list.
No way.
According to this survey, insomnia came in at number 1. And on the average, people would pay $27,400 to never have to worry about insomnia again.
$27,000?
I mean, not being able to sleep is a problem.
Ambien costs me about $1.50 every time I go get a prescription.
Bourbon and ZzzQuil, that'll also do the job, won't it?
Yeah. Hammer is telling me off the air. He's like, man, I might have a problem with ZzzQuil. I was trying to take a break the other day.
I heard a ZzzQuil commercial on WIBC, and I'm so ticked off I didn't get asked to be the spokesman.
Yeah.
Like, I would have done that in trade. Like, you don't have to pay me. Just send me some ZzzQuil. Let's make this thing happen.
So on average, people would pay $27,000 to cure insomnia.
Correct.
Okay.
Allergies coming in at number 2.
Really? So it's still not COVID?
No.
Wow.
Allergies, $13,900. The average person would pay that if they never had to worry about allergies for the rest of their life. COVID at number three, $13,500.
Seems, tells you all you need to know about generally how people feel.
It's well
COVID.
Worth shutting down the country for, that people would rather get rid of sneezing than deal with COVID. Number four, stomach aches and cramps.
See, that's above COVID for me.
Right? If you never had the old squirts again, $12,100.
I'd gladly pay it.
Like, I don't mind once in a while. Sometimes it's relaxing to take a good old-fashioned, you know, number two.
But yeah, but not repeatedly.
Well, I mean,
not like if I have a bug or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I pay money for that too. I don't ever want to go what I went through about this time last year. I had some sort of stomach flu. My whole family got it at the same time.
You were Jeff Daniels in Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. except it was coming out both ends.
Oh. Now you had a separate bucket, like when you were on the can, right? You didn't try to squeeze it through the hole. Because there's a little window sometimes, depending on how you sit.
As I'm sitting, I have to bend over and try to maneuver my legs and butt to the back of the toilet to do that at the same time. I never had to do it at the same time. I'm just saying it was a problem on both ends, but not at the same time. I would pay. That's the number one thing I would never go through again. I mean, not talking about cancer or anything like that, you know, but just stomach issues, throwing up, puking. I've never been so miserable.
Coming up, number seven on this list, migraines and other intense headaches.
Wow. See, I would have thought that would have been higher.
Dude, headaches suck.
Yeah, they're awful.
I've been having some headaches lately, man. It's awful. Sam?
I suffer from migraines that pretty much just knock me out entirely. Like eyes closed, lights off.
My son does too.
If you told me right now, $9,300, I could cure migraines, I would take out a loan. I'd go into credit card debt. I would do whatever it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like those types of headaches. We're not talking about the, man, I woke up, I drank too much. Yeah. We're talking about the debilitating, your head's throbbing. Those are the worst. All right, coming up next, Rob Kendall. He's in the hallway. He's ripping his shirt off like Hulk Hogan. He's ready to go off the rails. That's coming up right after the news with Harrison Silcox.
Right now, but go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
And now, Hammer and Nigel go off the rails with Rob Kendall on 93 WIBC.
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is here. Rob Kendall from the Kendall and Casey Show here to go off the rails. Rob, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, as always, to the segment sponsor, Garage Doors of Indianapolis.
Hammer, I'm pissed off. I thought we were going to get the announcement from Abdul. I thought
so
I was going
to.
I thought it was. So did Rob.
That's an inside joke because he posted it on social media like 30, 40 minutes before he went on with you.
Yeah, I asked Abdul the day before. I asked him this morning. I said, "You're not sharing this with anyone else, right? Like we're getting the announcement,
exclusive.
Yes. Yeah, it won't be heard or seen anywhere else because you know I don't want to promote that we've got the announcement if somebody else is going to scoop the announcement. No, it'll be fine. And then like 30 minutes before it's supposed to go on with us to make the announcement, he puts it on his Facebook page.
Rob's going to run the first negative campaign ad against Abdul. One day in, one broken promise. Indy can't afford any more broken promises.
I thought we had all agreed that Abdul was going to make the announcement on our show. Maybe I misconstrued that conversation.
Well, if I'm being honest, I wanted to get the announcement just to spite you guys.
Well, we'll talk to him tomorrow. We'll bust him up a little bit about that. Has there been any sort of attack ads like, you know, Mitch Daniels style so far at this point in terms of trying to discourage Abdul from running for mayor?
Well, here's what's interesting, because I think Abdul, and I disagree with Abdul on a lot of things, but I think for what a mayor does, Abdul would certainly be the best option available because, and you guys can chime in on this, I have no doubt he will get the crime problem under control, and that is the biggest issue facing the city of Indianapolis right now.
So if Abdul does nothing else but just focuses on crime, it feels like the city would be better off.
And I think I think Abdul, because he is charismatic enough that he will be able to. We were driving around, wife and I came downtown to eat last night. We were going home about 7:30, so this is not, you know, midnight or 1 a.m. And we're driving around, driving, you know, back to get out of downtown, and she just made a great point. She said, "This place is really depressing. Like, we're here every day, so the depression just kind of builds upon us. But for someone who doesn't come downtown every day, she said, where is everybody?" And I said, "That's a great question. There is such a malaise or depression or whatever over this city right now. And you guys are Indiana lifers. Hammer, you're an Indianapolis lifer. It used to be such a cool place to go, and it sucks that it's not that anymore. And maybe Abdul can inspire and motivate people to maybe make this city that again."
To be fair, it is February and dark and overcast and depressing most of the time anyway.
Yeah, but it's that way every
day. I understand
day.
What you're saying. I understand.
I mean, it should be so much better than this, and it could be so much better than this, and it wouldn't take that much effort to make it better than this.
Just go back a couple of years ago. My youngest son and I were going to a Colts game. And I think they were playing the Ravens that day. And, you know, we're walking from our parking garage down to the stadium. It's a decent day. I think it's in, like, October. And you just see all the homeless folks laying around. You see the panhandlers, the graffiti. I mean, it looks like all the places we in Indianapolis used to make fun of.
Yeah.
It looks like Detroit. It looks like East St. Louis. That's what it looks like now. And even my youngest said, "Man, there's a lot of broken windows and graffiti around here."
Well, that's the thing, right? Is it's easy to say, well, post-COVID, this city really went to crap. But then you, for those of us who've been down here, you realize, no, this city's been crap basically since 2016. And who took over in 2016? It is an absolute crisis of leadership. And 4 more years of Joe Hawks, it's going to be a disaster. And the reality is Abdul definitely gives you the best chance for it not to be Joe Hawks.
Are people actively looking through his social media yes. Over the past 20 years? Is that so what happens now that he's declared? It's something we could talk to him about tomorrow when he's on our show too. But typically, what's going to happen now? Are we going to see? What kind of reaction are we going to get?
Well, Hammer told him this, and I've told him this, that the worst thing he could do, and I don't think he's going to do it, is apologize for anything he's ever tweeted or Facebooked or said on a radio show or whatever, because part of Abdul's charm is that he says things that other people won't say, and he's doing it to be humorous and he's doing it to be provocative, and he's not sorry that he said it, and it would really hurt him if he came out and said, "Oh, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry for anyone offended." No, you're not. So right. don't be different. Be that guy that says, "Yeah, I said it, and you guys need to focus on the people that are dying every day in the streets, not my tweets."
And we mentioned this earlier, Rob. The people that are going through Abdul's tweets, these little interns and first-year staffers over at the mayor's office, Abdul is smarter than these people. Abdul is smarter than anybody on that side of the political scale, including Boss Hogsett. So there's nothing they're going to do to try to outsmart and get one over on Abdul.
Now, obviously, he's got, he's facing a very uphill battle in the sense of we just saw with the last election, Ryan Mears win easily, and he was an awful candidate, and he ran against a pretty well-funded, decent candidate by Marion County Republican standards for prosecutor. Yeah. But if you were to say, at least it's some hope, right? If any of the other Republicans that are running, because there are multiple other Republicans, get it, you're looking at that going, that's not going to inspire or motivate anyone. I think Abdul will at least make it interesting.
Well, what would be the difference between an Abdul campaign versus like a Jim Merritt campaign a couple years ago?
Well,
for mayor.
I think Abdul's going to say and do the things that will draw media attention. Like, I think we all believe in this room, Abdul will, whether it's on a debate stage or in a press conference or whatever, challenge Joe Hogsett, "Where were you during the riots?"
And can you prove it?
Yeah.
Because Joe Hogsett's easy answer would be, "I was at home watching the violence unfold." And, oh, all right, fine. And the rest of the butt sniffers in the media in the city, that works for me. That sounds great. But I'm hoping Abdul follows up on that.
Well, and so he's gonna press the envelope, right? And he's gonna do things in an unorthodox way.
He has to, or he won't win.
And he's gonna have some big ideas. I know he's working on some things with the economy. I know he's working on things with roads.
Is he gonna have the backing from the Republican Party here? It didn't seem like Jim Merritt had any backing, especially from the governor back in that race a couple of years ago.
Well, I mean, Diego Morales may not campaign for him, but I think I think the rest of these people will recognize. The primary is going to be interesting because, let's face it, Abdul should win that primary. He should win pretty easily. If he doesn't, he's got major issues. But if he can fundraise, if he can start to gain some momentum, if he can get some positive publicity. Now, the thing that's going to be interesting to me is Abdul is different than us, right? Like when you say Jason Hammer or Nigel or Rob Kendall, people think WIBC, right? We're sort of on our own island. Abdul's kind of been one of the media for all these years. Now, yes, he works here, but he also does indie politics, and he's written for publications. I mean, he's sort of been one of them. How are they going to treat him? Because let's face it, the majority of the media is super liberal, and they probably don't want a Republican in there.
So, I don't know if you guys know this or not. Abdul's black.
Oh, I hadn't noticed. I don't see race.
So, Rob, can he win over a portion of the vote in Indianapolis, which is predominantly blue, and it's also got a very large black voter base? Can he win over portions of those voters that other Republican candidates that weren't black had a hard time with?
Well, let's face it. Greg Ballard did it to some success. Greg Ballard, I don't know if you guys know, this is not black. So it can be done, but you've got a campaign, right? Abdul's going to have to go campaign in the places that it's hard to do. Now, Abdul's a different face. He's a different character than we've seen Republicans send in there before. But, and I don't know, this will be a question for him, right? Will he be willing to campaign in the hard places necessary to peel off enough votes to make it interesting?
When you say campaign, you mean go door to door, right? Like, because they're running, you know, there's a race for the mayor in Zionsville next year. John Stair was knocking on doors on my street yesterday. And that's, I mean, I pay attention to his campaign only because he's, you know, he's in Zionsville, but that's physically going
up to the door and ask him about Bob Siegel next time, Nige.
Yeah, well, he's been retired.
Tell me about your old coworker, two L's, Bob Siegel.
He's been retired for a couple years, but that's, you physically have to go door to door. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's going door to door. It's going to, you know, church groups or civic clubs or, you know, whatever in these areas that normally Republicans are not willing to go in there and work. Look, the reality of this is, because I've seen a lot of people say, well, you know, Abdul's super liberal, what's the point, blah, blah, blah. The reality is, I could get elected in Hendricks County. I could not get elected in Indianapolis. It's going to take, it's just a real observation here. It's going to take a pretty liberal Republican in order to win. Mm. But that Republican can do the right things on the nuts and bolts stuff, which is what matters for everyone.
You know the breakdowns of these types of things better than anybody probably in the city. Can Abdul win like the surrounding areas that vote for mayor of Indianapolis? I'm talking about Beech Grove, Speedway, maybe Lawrence. Can he win those areas and just compete in Indianapolis and still win this thing?
Well, I think the number one thing Abdul should do, Hammer, is figure out a way to get himself in a On Patrol Live ride-along in Beech Grove. I think that would be phenomenal. No, he's going to have to win votes in the city of Indianapolis. He can win, but you're not going to run up the score enough in Speedway or Beech Grove or Lawrence to offset, you know, losing 80-20 in the core of Indianapolis. He's going to have to peel off some of those votes. It can be done, but you got to be very disciplined message-wise, right? Like, you can't get distracted. You've got to draw attention to yourself, and you got to, the number one thing you got to do, and I think this is what Abdul can do, because people don't know Abdul, they like him a lot, right? And I'm saying that to be funny, but Abdul is a really, really likable guy when you get to know him, and I think he can inspire some people. Now, whether that can beat the Democrat machine, I don't know. And the big question is going to be, will Scrooge McDuck down there at 200 West Washington Street, Eric Holcomb, will he actually instruct his donors to help Abdul, or will he leave him to die like he did Jim Merritt?
That was my question earlier. Exactly.
Holcomb's going to make Todd Rokita stump for him. Last time I checked, they had a little beef.
Can you stick around for one more segment,
well,
Rob?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be right back. Rob Kendall here going off the rails, 93 WIBC. And we're back with Rob Kendall going off the rails here on the Hammer and Nigel show. Earlier, you guys were talking about LeBron James being in town tonight.
Hammer, was talking about how LeBron is going to be playing, the Lakers will play the Pacers tonight. And, you know, we got in a conversation about where LeBron is in terms of the I must see this person when they come to my city discussion. Like, Tom Brady played in a preseason game here this past year. I had zero interest in going, but I had a friend who had a ticket, and I decided to go because I said, this is the greatest person to ever play quarterback in the history of the NFL. You would be a moron to not be able to say, for free, I got a chance to see him, even for one series, and you didn't do it. And now I'm so glad I did it. And I think you're right, Hammer. I think LeBron is probably in that conversation, whether you say he's better than Michael Jordan or not. He's certainly in the must-see conversation.
Is he number one on the list right now with Tom Brady, retiring. And again, LeBron's not the same dude that he was a couple years ago. He's getting old toward the back end of his career, but he's chasing the all-time scoring record. He still puts up big numbers. Of all the players in the NFL, whether it's Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, you go to baseball, like Aaron Judge maybe, is LeBron James still number one on the list of when this athlete comes to your town, that athlete alone is worth the price of admission?
He's got to be right, because like Aaron Judge was because he had one great season. And like, I don't even know.
Well, I mean, he's had a couple really.
Well, but I mean, it's before last year, somebody's saying, I must go see Aaron Judge play. I don't know. I mean, Mike Trout's not that. The only person that I could think would be close is if there was a golf tournament in your community and it was one of those rare times where Tiger played.
Oh, yeah.
But he plays so rarely now. Like an athlete who plays night in and night out, it's got to be LeBron James, doesn't it?
What's coming up on the big show tomorrow?
Well, I always get asked about, are there any politicians you like? Is there anyone at all, Mr. Negativity?
We asked you that.
Well, there is, and his name is Marlon Stutzman. He's a former congressman from the 3rd Congressional District, thinking about running for Congress again now that a friend of your show, he won't come on my show, but friend of your show, Jim Banks, is running for Senate. So we're going to have Marlon Stutzman on to talk about that.
And special thanks to
Garage Doors of Indianapolis, the greatest dang garage door company in the entire world.
Let's go.
Thanks, Rob.
He's off the rails. He's Rob Kendall. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.